Welcome to the Besties with Breasties podcast. Sarah Hall here. I am a certified health and wellness coach, athletic trainer, mom, and breast cancer survivor. I help women overcome their own mind drama to make mind shifts that open up the possibility for their most empowered and energetic life.
And I am Beth Wilmus, author, speaker, and founder of a human investment organization, otherwise known as a nonprofit, called Faith Through Fire. Our mission is to reduce the fear and anxiety that breast cancer patients feel and replace it with hope and a path toward thriving.
This podcast is about our experiences with breast cancer
and life after as young survivors and moms.
Hello.
Hello. I like your PJs.
I like your PJs. I mean, clearly we have similar styles.
That's right. Yeah, we're both wearing cardigans with black.
Just black head.
Very chic. We slept together last night, so we came straight from that to podcasting.
We slept together. Oh man, what happened? Oh no.
What?
My little hand fidget. My other one. It's the satisfying one is gone.
Oh no.
Yeah. It was a good time.
It was a good time.
We met some interesting people.
Yeah. Short story is we got invited to spend the night in an energy room, which apparently a lot of cancer patients have been utilizing to lessen side effects from treatment. So Sarah and I went and spent the night in one last night and met two lovely individuals. One had stage four endometrial cancer. The other had stage four throat cancer. The whole gist of it is you sleep in this big room with 16 beds. With strangers, which was out of my comfort zone for sure.
Not for me.
No. Sarah made a beeline for the man in the room and was like, I'm sleeping next to you.
You think that sounds so bad.
You literally were like, there are 16.
He looked like he would have very good conversation.
And he did. He was lovely. But there are 16 beds in that room. And Sarah's like, oh, I'll bunk right next to you. And I'm like, okay, we're doing this. This is happening. We're sleeping right next to this man.
Yeah.
And we did all night long.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting. They had all these monitors that had multicolored screens, kind of like
the Matrix.
Scrolling, very Matrix. And it was bright in there. I brought a face mask. You did not.
Mm-mm. Mistake.
Yeah. And the idea is that it is frequencies that restore your cells and allow your cells to more effectively combat disease.
Yeah. Create energy through ATP.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
I'm glad we did it. You know, I am in general lean into new things and new experiences.
Well, that's kind of the basis for today. We're going to be talking about, it's like the episode's called Getting Uncomfortable with Change. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was going to ask
Doing new things is change.
Right. Yeah. I was going to ask you, like, what's your relationship with change? But I feel like you're pretty pro-change.
I love change. I, like,
tell Sarah to go.
I run towards change.
Yeah, tell Sarah she's going to spend the night in a room with a bunch of strangers. And she's like, yes, please.
Yes, please.
Whereas I'm like, what? No. Yeah.
You're a little bit more. You're skeptical about just most things.
It didn't sound. I think you approach things like, this is going to be a great story and just like a new experience. Whereas I'm like, my first thought is, why would I do this?
Yeah. I like to be that. I mean, maybe this is going to sound weird or pretentious, but I like to be that interesting person in a party. Like when somebody's like, oh, have you heard of cold plunging? And I'm like, yeah, I love doing it. It's really interesting and it's cool. And this is what it could do for your body. Like, you know, I like to be that person where...
Yeah,
you've got interesting stories and interesting experiences.
You just have to know that some people think it's weird. Like, interesting,
totally.
Interesting and weird are like two sides of the same coin.
Totally.
But I will say that over time, I have grabbed, like I was telling Sarah, I said, you know, there once upon a time, if I would have told my husband that I'm spending the night in an energy room, he would have been like, what? I mean, first of all, he knows I wouldn't have done that in a past life. And then now I told him I was going to do it. And he's just like, okay, see you tomorrow. It's like, sure,
you're slowly, to our point today, you're slowly conditioning him to.
Well, I mean, he's like, just embraced the weird. He's just like, yep, this is our life now.
Beth's
going to spend the night in an
energy
room.
What is that Marilyn Monroe quote where it's like, well-behaved women or whatever rarely make history? And it's like,
yeah.
I think I apply that not to my bad behavior, but I think I apply that to, like, you know, if you just sit at home and do nothing, like,
well,
where's the interest and zest in your life?
To your point, so Gary and I, we have a long history of friends and family who have done the same thing for generations. Like, they're very comfortable with
The same.
The same.
Yeah.
And routine and whatever their families did, they did. Mm-hmm. And that's what's comfortable to them. And we're going to talk about that. Like, mm-hmm. there is comfort in that predictability. I think that's incredibly boring.
Totally.
Like, I'm just like, yeah, I mean, just, you know, and so I actually credit cancer with giving me a more interesting life because it has opened up all these avenues of thoughts and interests and interactions with like mm-hmm. these two lovely people we met last night in the yeah. room that otherwise I would have never met.
Totally.
Never had the conversations that we had last night. And so, you know, I do like change for the fact, to your point, of it gives you an interesting life.
Yeah.
You know? It's like you can have the most amazing, insane conversations with people when you're willing to step outside your comfort zone.
Yeah.
That being said, change can be very hard when you're trying to make changes yeah. to things that are hard to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, those life patterns, it's hard to ungrain those.
It is. So today we're going to talk about why change is so hard.
And then we're going to talk about neuroplasticity and the concept, what it is and how you can use it.
Yep. And then we're going to give you a recipe for change, should you choose. Right. But before we do that, let's hear from our first sponsor. Ann's Bra Shop features skilled mastectomy fitters ready to assist you in selecting the perfect breast forms, bras, swimsuits, and camisoles for your post-surgery needs. They have three locations in the St. Louis area, Chesterfield in Wentzville, Missouri, across the river in O'Fallon, Illinois, and a fourth location south on I-55 in Cape Girardeau. Visit Ann's Bra Shop at www.brashop.com to learn more.
All right, we are back. So let's talk about what makes change so hard.
Oh my gosh. I mean, there's so many things. It's like kind of what I just touched on, like ingrained habits, like your childhood, how you grew up, how mm-hmm. the people that you were friends with, how they all yeah. behave.
Those patterns, when they get ingrained in childhood, I feel like even moving into adulthood can be really hard to...
Oh, for sure.
You've forged a pretty deep rut.
Yeah, yeah. 100%. I think one of the things that makes change harder is people tend to do all or nothing. So they'll try to make mm-hmm. too many changes at once.
Mm-hmm. And then fail at one and then get overwhelmed and not do any of them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Instead of just making one small change and really kind of accomplishing that before yeah. they move on to something else, they try to make too many. And I've been guilty of that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, who hasn't really? I see that a lot, like when people try to make food changes, it's less like just pick one simple thing.
So, yeah, yeah, instead of doing the whole shebang.
Making changes that can alter your normal routine. So this one is a big one when you're trying to go to bed early or trying to wake up early mm-hmm. or anything that you do with your friends and your family, because they influence so much about like your normal patterns.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If you want to change the way you're eating, but your rest of your family's not on board and they want to yeah. eat what mm-hmm. they keep, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like my husband and I am always like, stop bringing this stuff into the house.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have trouble with self-control. If yeah. it's not there, I won't eat it.
Yeah.
If it is, I struggle with stopping at one Oreo. Yeah.
Or if you're trying to like go to bed earlier.
Yeah.
But the only time that you get to spend with your spouse or loved one is like that hour or two before mm-hmm. bed, then you're just like, well, now I'm missing out on that. And so, you yeah. know, it becomes a conflict. So,
yeah, for sure. So normal routine disruption is a big one. Impatience. So I think this is a big deal. Not seeing results right away and then just abandoning the entire thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that we're going to dive into compounded interest, people, but... It does not happen automatically. You know, yeah. it's kind of like that whole, what is that parable about the stone cutter where it's like, you know, he chips away at this stone at, you know, 100 times and on the 101st strike, it breaks apart. Mm-hmm. And it's like that 101st strike was not what broke the rock. It was mm-hmm. the 100 before it.
Yeah.
And so I think what we do is we start down this path, we start making changes, we don't see the immediate payoff mm-hmm. and we abandon the whole thing.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you're never going to make change.
The lack of understanding around the benefits of making the change. So like if something just doesn't feel like it's really worth the work that you have to put in to make the change,
right.
you know, people can abandon
yeah.
changing any kind of behavior for that.
And so here's something that Sarah and I just were sparring about offline.
Oh, the gloves were out.
Oh, they were out. So talking about change is different than actually doing it, right? So sometimes we say we want change, but we're not willing to do it. We're just not ready yet. So this sparked...
But yeah. I think talking about change is important.
Yeah.
Because it means your mind is working through it.
Yeah, it's the yeah. first step. It's like, you know, it's like any other process. It's yeah. the first step. It's like acknowledgement.
Yeah.
But the whole debate between you and I came around motivation versus discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying that you feel like you need to be motivated in order to cultivate the discipline. I said, absolutely not. If you wait for motivation, you'll never do anything. You have to cultivate the discipline, and the discipline results, gives you results, and the mm-hmm. results are what motivate you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went through this whole thing about chicken or egg.
Well, see, but then you circle back to the whole, if until you see results. Well, if you're not seeing results right away, then you lose discipline.
Ooh. No, discipline's doing it even when you don't see, like, that's what discipline is continuing to do the thing, even though you may not see the immediate results, even though, like, it's, yeah. And so it was this whole concept of, can you, you know, can, do you need to be motivated before you can actually make change? And I say, if I waited until I felt motivated to exercise, it would never happen.
Mm-hmm.
I have to cultivate the discipline of exercise. When I start seeing my, you know, inches go down mm-hmm. and I feel healthier and I feel better, then my motivation kicks in and then I continue the cycle. But and we're going to do a whole episode dedicated around developing more discipline. That's a whole thing. But I think what we found, because of course we went to Google, mm-hmm. was that both are equally important.
Yeah.
You know, discipline and motivation work hand in hand. And so it's not,
and
like...
And you're, one is not mutually exclusive.
Right.
Like, you can't just have motivation or just have discipline.
Yeah.
I think... But the debate between you and I is that I think that motivation comes first and then the discipline. But
I mean, there's so many things about being an adult that I don't feel motivated to do that I do because I know it's the right thing to do.
Right. But knowing that it's the right thing to do is your motivation.
Yeah. See, guys, see how this works? Like, we're just going to go around and around and around. So that leads us to neuroplasticity, which I find to be fascinating.
It's so interesting.
We're doing this boot camp with our survivors. It's like this transition to a survivorship boot camp. And we did a whole section on neuroplasticity and people were just loving it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like what we just talked about with like our ingrained habits from childhood. Those have created pathways in your brain. And maybe some of those are not positive.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some of them are positive, but maybe some of them aren't positive. The exciting part is that you can change those pathways. You mm-hmm. can change those habits. And that's kind of...
I think of them, and this is the country person in me, but when you think about driveways on a country farm,
mm-hmm.
the tire ruts, mm-hmm. like... Your truck easily naturally just goes down into the tire ruts because they've been driven 100 million times.
Right.
But it becomes very difficult if those tire ruts get to be too deep and now you're going to high side your truck to move them over.
Mm-hmm.
So now your truck has to drive in the middle
mm-hmm.
and on the side, and now you have to forge a new path. And that like takes a little bit of like steering wheel, like maneuvering and like balance for you to keep your truck up there.
Yeah,
so,
that's a good analogy.
For all you visual learners out there, that's what I think about.
Yeah, 100%. You also said something when we were kind of like going back and forth about motivation and all and the steps that you take to kind of cultivate it. It's like when it comes to trying like a process,
mm-hmm.
like there's a process to developing new neural pathways. You can't just go out there and be like, I want this, and it's just going to happen. You have to actually follow a process. And when I was kind of arguing this point, Sarah was like, we do it with the nonprofit all the time. We figure out something that we want to change. We pilot it. We figure out what's working and what's not working. We make adjustments. We set a new goal and we start the whole process over again. And I was like, oh yeah, that actually is how we make changes and refine our processes and figure out what works and what doesn't work. And so the same can be said for your brain.
Totally.
So there is a little bit of work on the front end. You have to be willing to put in the work.
And we're not talking like it doesn't have to be big things. Like if your dentist is like, hey, you need to start flossing. And we'll talk about habit stacking, which I feel like really fits nicely with flossing specifically. But like if your dentist is like, you need to floss, and you're just like, and you roll your eyes at it. Go out and research like why you would want to floss and why it's important, and then find the discipline to marry your flossing and your teeth brushing. And then if you don't end up doing it, then you can be like, why do I keep just skipping flossing? Maybe this one hits home for me because I freaking hate flossing.
I was gonna say, you're really hyper focused on flossing.
I don't like flossing. It's like my least favorite thing to do. I feel like it stretches my lips out. And
oh, okay. This is a thing for you. Okay, continue.
But it seems so simple. I know it seems simple, but that's what I think that's the whole point, is that it can be something simple. And as soon as you find it within you to find it important enough and to find the discipline to do it, then you can apply this to everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, doing your dishes, making your bed in the morning, the way that you parent your kids, like the time you go to bed. I mean, everything. So
yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many people do you think are out there where they're just flying by the seat of their pants and doing what feels good in the moment and not actually building out a process to get them what they want in the long term?
I mean, most people.
You think are flying by the seat of their pants?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you get really, like, this is where I think the whole, maybe the whole yoga practice, and it doesn't have to be yoga, but just in general mindfulness, mm-hmm. like, you can do everything mindfully. And it could be as simple as, like, recently, I was reading this whole thing about how sleeping with your phone next to your bed is really not good. And I was thinking about, like, okay, well, like, I don't have to have my phone by my bed, but moving my phone across the room, I've had to evaluate my whole life.
Well, because
like, this sounds so simple, but like, I usually scroll before I go to bed. And now I have to get up to turn my alarm off in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it just being mindful about where my phone was charging at night changed so much about my habits and my patterns,
which is actually
a
reason
think about it.
Which is actually a reason that a lot of people abandon changes, because it's not just that change. It influences now your schooling behavior.
Right.
It influences your alarm and influences how
right.
you like to wake up in the morning.
Right.
So yeah, actually, that's a reason why people don't stick with habit change, because it's a snowball effect.
It is. Yeah.
So yeah, if you give some time thinking about, okay, this is going to impact all these other things, and am I okay with mm-hmm. that?
Right.
Yeah, you got to spend some time thinking about that.
Yeah. And honestly, it was okay because I knew scrolling at night was bad.
Yeah.
It was bad for my brain. And I know that I'm more likely to get up on time in the morning if I have to walk across my room. So when
you
evaluate it, it's like, oh, okay, well, this is sort of a win-win.
When I sleep with my phone like across the room or out of the room, oh my gosh, I sleep so much
better. Yeah.
So much better.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what are the ways that, like, your favorite ways to form new neural pathways?
My favorite way to form, I mean, like, I feel like I'm do it all the time. I set myself up for success in a way. So if I, just like my phone, notice something that I want to try, mm-hmm. I, before it becomes bedtime, I moved my charger across the room. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's best for me, because when it comes to just going to bed that night, it would have been work for me to move my dresser out and to plug my phone in behind it and to move it across the room and set it all up. But since it was already there, it made it so much easier. So taking steps before I have to make that decision helps. And the same can be done for, like, people who food prep. If your snack is already prepared, you're more likely to choose that snack than to have to, like, prepare your snack in the moment when you're like, it's snack time.
Yeah. I was leaning, like, more toward fun ways to, like, change your neural pathways. Like, I like.
Is there fun way?
Yeah.
Okay, like, please, like, do tell.
Reading a good book. Like, I'm always learning through reading.
Mm-hmm.
I know you like to read for fun, but I read, like, business books and mm-hmm. new ideas and concepts and things like that. That helps me form new neural pathways. I think I love to travel to form new neural pathways.
I see what you're saying. Yes.
Like, there's fun ways that you can change your neural pathways and open yourself up. And again, that can lead to other habits that are positive for you.
Yeah.
If you want to spend more time with your family and you mm-hmm. plan an annual trip, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, you can do it the other way too. It's not all like, oh, I have to do the thing yes. I don't want to do. It's like forming new neural pathways, I think, can be really enjoyable. And I know that you like those processes. Like, putting those processes in place are fun for you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what you like.
Efficiencies.
Yeah, efficiencies. Like, I'm going to do this and it's going to result in that. And then, you know, that is fun for you.
Yeah. Not fun for everybody.
Not fun for everybody, but that's okay.
Definitely for the type A personalities.
Well, before we, like, jump into recipe for change, just to kind of equip you guys on how you can kind of start this process, let's do Boobs in the News.
Let's do it.
Boobs in the News is a fun segment where we read funny tweets by real people or ridiculous news stories.
Boobs in the News. Boobs in the News. Boobs in the News.
Okay. You ready for this?
Lay it on me.
I know you'll have an opinion about this because you're a yogi. The title,
oh, no.
The title of this is Three Little Piggies at a Yoga Class Equals Maximum Happiness. And
oh my gosh, this is like goat yoga except for pig yoga.
You got it.
Oh.
You got it.
I think
it.
We've taken this too far.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. I'm glad that you're, you know.
I mean, I've seen the puppy yoga. That would be pretty cool, but.
I mean, I'm looking this through. Okay. And it's so. People are driving 2 hours to go to this pig yoga that was started by a retired New Hampshire dentist and her daughter.
Hmm.
And it says, the best thing about the piglet yoga was, of course, the piglets and how cute they are. Just when you're getting to a point where you needed a break, you had a visitor come to see you and you could quit without looking like a quitter. I don't know. Yeah, they're adorable. I don't know. It says, Beyond Yoga and Wellness owner Ashley teaches piglet yoga and says there's such a demand that online registrations typically sell out within hours.
Wow. So yeah. No.
It says the classes begin with her inviting participants not to fret over interrupting their flows to interact with the piglets, which come from a friend's farm. It says, during the class, you have piglets causing mischief and running on you and on top of you and cuddling with you. It's super cute. I don't know.
I think piglets are really freaking cute, but I just... Maybe, okay, so this is obviously Sarah Hall opinion, not anyone else opinion.
Uh-huh.
Yoga is just yoga. Like, just enjoy the freaking yoga. And like, farm animals, enjoy the farm animals.
I agree. I'm like, you're not doing yoga if you're being interrupted by farm animals.
Yeah.
Like, isn't yoga all about mindfulness and like really staying present and being in your body? And now you've got like animals who are potentially defecating near you.
Like, some people just connect so heavily with animals, and maybe that's the Sarah Hall in me where I'm just like, I mean,
that's
animals are cute, but they're like, I like them.
Yeah, that's my sister-in-law. My sister-in-law has done goat yoga. She doesn't do yoga otherwise, but she does goat yoga, and she likes like the interaction. She's an animal lover.
Yeah.
So I think that's the appeal.
Yeah.
So my thing is if I were a yoga instructor and I was going to do that, you just have to know that the people that go to that are not serious about yoga. They're serious about animals.
Totally. Yeah. Different strokes for different folks, just not me.
Which is fine. But I'm like, if you're a yoga instructor, I don't know.
No.
I would want to like teach yoga.
This is like, maybe I'm spoiled, but I don't like yoga in the grass.
Oh yeah,
the bugs jump up on your mat, and now I'm distracted by that, and like if they get on me, God forbid, I will swat them away. And
I also want a very stable ground. Like, I want a stable you know what I mean? When you're on grass, it's like very uneven and lumpy.
I've done yoga in the sand. Not mm-mm. my favorite. Like, mm-mm. I don't know. I
notice that with those exercise videos, they always have the instructors doing it in the sand, and I'm like, ew, no. Yeah,
no, I don't like sand in general.
They're just trying to church it all up. You know what I mean? Like, it's not good enough on its own.
No, they've definitely westernized it.
Like,
it's
like
beautiful women on the beach in Lululemon. And oh, I have all kinds of opinions about that. But yeah.
Please. You know, it's like those reels where it's like they show somebody beautiful doing that. And then they show the real person trying to do it. And it's hysterical. Yeah. You know?
Yes.
I'm like, that's really how it is.
Yeah. What are they? Instagram versus reality.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I'm with you. Keep the pigs and the goats at the farm.
Yeah.
You know,
I haven't seen pig yoga. I've seen puppy and I've seen goat. And I think I've been offered to go to, and I'm like, nah, that's not for me.
I
don't want a goat standing on my back.
I just, again, these are animal lovers. These are not yoga goers.
That's true. I like goats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. There's your boobs.
Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news.
Okay. And we're back. So let's talk about the recipe for change, right?
Yes.
How do we do this? Like, much like the nonprofit, it can be a fun process.
Yeah.
I think I approach it like, oh, this sounds like work. But if you look at it through the lens of changing your neural pathways,
mm-hmm.
exploring exciting new ways to live your life,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing things different than maybe other people in your family, mm-hmm. which can be exciting in itself. I remember, like, I've talked about this before, but I was an adult before I realized, wait a minute, I don't have to live like everybody else lives. I can do things my own way and what's in the best interest of my own family.
Mm-hmm.
It was so freeing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like that mindset shift could mm-hmm. be like really instrumental.
Yeah. And maybe we didn't really touch. I guess we did making changes around your friends and family. I remember the first year I was like, I'm going to make a goal to not drink alcohol at all this year. And I put some thought into it, but I was like, when are going to be the times that are going to be the most difficult? And I was like, well, it's going to be when I'm around my friends, because that's the only time I'm ever really like tempted to do it. And I'm like, but why is that the only time you're ever tempted? It's because I want to feel included.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have to think through like all those things, but it can be difficult for you to break societal norms, because when you show up and you're like, oh, I'm not really drinking. And then people are like, but why not? Yeah. And then they try to get you to do it. And then you're just like, now it feels really weird, because you're like peer pressuring me into drinking because you're drinking, you know, or whatever the case may be, or eating the dessert or whatever.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, like the family members where like food is their love language.
Yeah.
And they're like, have some pie. And you're like, no, I'm good. No, have some pie. No, I'm
like,
I'm
really?
Okay.
I don't want any pie.
I'm full.
Yeah.
Have the pie.
Yes.
fine, I'll just have a little, you know?
Yeah, right.
Or
like, and then you feel like you've just given over a piece of yourself because you're like, I gave in because you were
badgering me to eat.
Peer pressuring
me.
Yeah,
I know, it's so, so true. Yeah. So, okay, step number one is recognizing what behavior isn't serving your goals.
Yes. So this could be like too much TV, scrolling social media before you go to sleep, drinking unhealthy food, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's gonna
not
be
flossing your teeth.
Yeah. I was going to say, for some of us, flossing is a real issue.
Ugh, I do it. I just want to.
I mean, good for you. Because most people who don't like flossing to do something just choose not to do it.
Yeah.
So number one's recognizing it. Number two is noticing the triggers. You just kind of spoke about that. Like, where am I going to be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that we're going to talk about this, I think, more in a future episode. But I think it's really important to talk about, you know, we always think of ourselves as implementing change in perfect ideal conditions,
mm-hmm.
but really it pays to think about what is the worst case scenario here and how am I going to persevere in that situation? Because that's what's more likely. That's what thwarts your progress, right?
Yeah.
Like, I have to go to a big party.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be confronted with alcohol.
Yeah.
What am I going to do in that situation? How am I going to handle that? Will set you up for success.
Right.
So noticing what triggers are potentially there that could derail you.
Mm-hmm. And then setting a very specific goal. So with my alcohol, I was like, I want to go 365 days and I want to have no alcohol. I set a very specific goal. I started at a specific date. I ended at a specific date. You don't have to have one that's quite so lengthy. It could just be like, I floss for 3 times this week.
Sarah's like, I'm not going to drink for 365 days. And I said, I'm not going to drink for a month.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that speaks to it.
Right.
Like, it doesn't, your goal just has to be specific to you.
Right. Yeah. And I started with like, I'm going to go 4 weeks. And I know in the summertime, like we're approaching, and then at 4 weeks though, I was like, oh, I did that pretty easily. I'm going to try to go 2 months between, you know, having a drink, and then 2 months stretched into 3. Now I'm approaching summer and I'm like, ooh, summer's going to be tough.
Yeah.
And I'm not going into it like, I'm definitely not doing this.
Yeah.
I'm going into it with the idea of I am going to do it a lot less than I have in previous summers.
Yeah.
And I'm going to figure out what makes sense for me. Right. So it's that figuring it out. But
yeah, be specific to what you really, really want and why. And then implement time-bound goal for evaluation. So for you, it was, I'm going to start with a month. And then for me, it was 365. Or with the flossing example, you could say, I'm going to floss 3 times this week. And I think the shorter ones are a little bit easier for the second or the next step, which is evaluation. So at the end of the week, if you're like, well, I flossed once.
Mm-hmm.
Now you give yourself an opportunity to be like, well, why did I only floss once? Did I not set my floss out? Did I forget? What made it so the circumstances were not optimal for me to remember to floss, or that it didn't seem important for me to floss? Or like with the nonprofit, the evaluate step is where we kind of go back and we say, what worked? What didn't work? What could we change? What could have made this better? What was a total crash and burn? And then you can then pivot and make changes for your next goal. So set a next, the next goal is like, oh, this week I'm going to do it. I'm going to floss 3 times this week, but I'm going to keep my floss right next to my toothbrush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For all those people that don't brush their teeth either, you're going to have to figure something else
well,
out.
Well, yeah, you got to change that. Actually, that should be your first goal.
Right.
Flossing don't
actually
really matter.
I think the dentist says flossing is more important than brushing your teeth.
Oh, well, great.
Which might be a little nugget to put in your brain, Sarah, to where you're
no
like,
kidding.
Fine, I guess I'll floss.
Ugh.
I think the...
My teeth are tight.
Well,
it's
okay.
It's so hard.
That's what Gary says. So Gary's... So I'm always telling Gary that I think it's gross that he doesn't really floss.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's gross. I'm like, you don't want to get in there. It's so satisfying to like make sure you don't have anything in there. He goes, my teeth are so compactly tight together that it's like painful and obnoxious to floss. He's like, I break the floss. And he goes, and my dentist tells me my gums are perfection. And he goes, and I never do it. And I'm like, ew.
They haven't like been on me about my gums. And so I think it's like I've lost my motivation to want to do it. It does feel satisfying when I leave the dentist. I'm like, ooh, like I can. It just feels cleaner.
Yeah.
I mean, and not that my teeth don't feel clean. I have a really great toothbrush. But I don't know. I just hate like I feel like I've got to work it in there.
Of all the
wow,
things
we've derailed.
We derailed a little bit. Well, before we give our final thoughts, let's hear from our second sponsor.
Thrivent is a proud sponsor of Faith Through Fire. Thrivent believes money is a tool and not a goal. The Gateway Financial Group with Thrivent is local to the St. Louis area and can work with you to create a financial strategy that reflects your priorities and helps you protect the things that matter to you, like family and giving back. Please call 314-783-7000 4214 to schedule a free consultation with one of Thrivent's Gateway Financial Advisors.
All right, we are back. What do we want to leave this episode with?
I mean,
floss your teeth.
Yeah, we really spent a lot of time on the flossing.
Well,
that's okay.
That's a good example.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's just validating, right? Change can be hard, but it can also be super exciting.
Yeah.
I think you and I have gotten to this point in our lives where we're like, change is fun. You know, you get to
this
be.
This is when you know, like,
you're
nothing,
old.
Yeah. You're
you know
old
you're
because,
old.
Like, making a change about flossing your teeth is exciting.
Yeah, that's bad.
Oh, geez.
But I mean, you know, I mean, this is kind of, I don't know if this is gonna be like, nah, da, da, da. But you when you're young, you know, you have so many firsts, right?
Yeah.
You're gonna have your first job. You're gonna have your first house. You're gonna get married. You're gonna have your kids. You're mm-hmm. gonna get, you
There's
know,
the, so much excitement,
the promotion. Yeah. You're gonna do this. You're gonna do that. And then things, and then it becomes about all the people you're raising. So mm-hmm. like my life centers around getting them to be productive adults, you know, mm-hmm. and so. So, yeah, your excitement looks different, right? Mm-hmm. You got to get it where you can get it. And I think I've just come to this realization that I can create excitement within my own life by trying new things.
And at the same time, you're creating a great, you're setting up neural pathways for your kids because they're like, wow, remember when mom, like, you know, did all these really cool changes with our food and we felt better and like,
oh, no,
you know.
That's not how they're going to remember that. They're
okay,
going to
well,
be like,
dang.
Remember how mom was so crazy about, you know, and she went and spent that night in that energy room that one time. Like, remember how weird she was in that period of her life? I mean, fine.
I'm
whatever.
Surprised she didn't grow dreads.
I'll tell you what I hope they walk away with is that it's okay to change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's okay for you to chart your own path, try, experiment, fail, get up. Do it again. Do it a different way.
Yeah.
Figure out what works. If you don't like the floss, maybe you just, you know, I don't know.
Buy a water pick.
Yeah. Buy a water pick. Exactly. There's always a solution. So until next time, guys.
See ya.
Thank you for being a listener of the Besties with Breasties podcast. If this podcast had a positive impact on your journey, leave us a review or consider becoming a supporter. You can donate with the link in the show notes or at faiththroughfire.org. This episode was hosted by Sarah Hall and Beth Wilmes, audio and production edits by Innovative Frequencies.